really what people need to do is think about, given your existing business and your customer problems, right? Assume that there is a baseline of you're in business for a reason, you have customers and they have problems to solve. What are the overlays? Like, what are the ways that those customer and business problems actually overlay on what is now creatively possible?
If you're a tech leader looking to learn today's best practices for leading high-functioning teams, you're in the right spot. In each episode, we learn from today's top tech leaders as they share their successes, their failures, and their lessons learned along the way. I'm Debbie Madden, and this is the Scaling Tech Podcast, your blueprint for scaling tech teams. Let's dive in. Hey, everyone. Today, we're diving into LLM fluency. What is it? Why do tech teams need it? Why should we care about it? And why LLM transformation is the new digital transformation? So, Dan, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being with us today on Scaling Tech Podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Debbie.
So, everyone, we're talking with Dan Mason, who I have had the pleasure of knowing for many, many years now. And Dan is a principal here at Stride, so we get to work together as well. He is a product and engineering leader with deep roots throughout New York tech. He's led teams and products at companies including ESPN, Viacom, People Magazine, Shutterstock, and a lot more that I'm not mentioning right now. So let's jump in. So LLMs are, you know, the Goldilocks of the day, if you will. Tech leaders across the globe have been, you know, racing to really identify best practices. How do we incorporate LLMs and AI into our organizations? And how to measure impacts. So before we get into the hows and the whys, let's define LLM fluency. Many of us have heard of agile fluency. So what is right. What is LLM fluency in your own words?
Yeah, so you know, I think the thing that's hardest right now is really just separating the signal from the noise, right? You know, it's not a function, right? Fluency is not a function of reading every single link and clicking every single button and trying every single ridiculous app out there, because there are so many. But I think there is a baseline that you have to reach, right? And I think it's really, you know, do you understand what these things are and are not good at and what they can and can't do, right? So if you're going into this with an assumption that an LLM can literally replace every function in your business, it can't. There are some things that these are just, you know, they're not good at, you know, reporting at this point facts, right? They're great at generating creative content or at, you know, riffing on a theme, right? That sort of thing is where they shine. Understanding the use cases that are relevant to you, right? So you have to know what they can do, and then you have to understand why it matters. Those two things, I think, are sort of the thing you can get by a little bit of playing around and by, you know, kind of trying, you know, a few things and seeing how they work for you. But then the third, I think, is a big one, which is how do you actually tie what these things can do and how you can use them to a long-term strategy, right? Like, how do you end up with a strategic advantage because of the way you use LLMs? And I think that's where, you know, fundamentally, it's early days. I don't think there's a tremendous amount of good, you know, prior art, you know, outside of maybe the machine learning world. You know, there's a lot of good examples on how to use machine learning in various business cases. But for LLMs, it's all new. So, you know, the things we're starting to see popping out now is new product features, you know, like generative fill in Adobe is a really cool one, right? Like there's stuff out there where you can see exactly where this fits, you know, in those products and those businesses. Most people don't have sort of that clear cut of an idea, and fluency is something they're going to have to build so that they can come up with their own version of that.
Okay. So what you're saying is if there's an expertise that builds on itself. So we're starting with, okay, what LLMs can and can't do. Then you say next level up is really understanding use cases that are relevant to you and your team.
Yeah.
And then above that, the most fluent of us today really ties these into a strategic business plan, wrapping this all in with the fact that this is all new.
Correct. And you would have to start thinking about and really planning for incorporating these things in your business for real, right? And that's beyond using ChatGPT to generate an occasional function in code or writing your blog posts, right?
Right,
it's like,
right.
How am I going to change my team? How am I going to change the way people work? What technology do I need to invest in versus what technology is just table stakes, right? You know, those kinds of questions are going to require real changes in how people invest and how people think about their teams.
Yeah. And so you talked about separating the signal from the noise briefly just now, but
yep.
So if I'm a tech leader, I'm not fairly technical. But I already have seen so many really positive applications of LLMs, even at Stride, right? Many of the Striders are using LLMs on our own tooling. We're starting to use it with Remote Retro a little bit, and we're using it on some of our client projects. And so how do tech leaders, if our peers are listening to this, how can they start to separate like the what's most important for their particular team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really what's going on here is just a creative explosion, right? You know, it's that there's and you know, creativity is all over the map. There's good creativity, you know, there's sort of creativity that is a distraction and doesn't necessarily add anything to your business or your product. You know, and then there's stuff in between. And so I think, you know, the main change I've seen, right, is that you're now seeing people working across disciplines. You're seeing people who are not coders writing code. Right now, is this a good thing for the world, for, you know, human creativity? I think it is. Right. Is it necessarily a good thing for your business? Unclear. Right. There may be reasons why that's good. And there may be reasons why that is actually not scalable and helpful to your business. Right. So I think really what people need to do is think about, given your existing business and your customer problems. Right. Assume that there is a baseline of you're in business for a reason. You have customers and they have problems to solve. What are the overlays? Like, what are the ways that those customer and business problems actually overlay on what is now creatively possible, right? And I think that's part of this fluency thing is getting to the point where you can see that stuff, right? The patterns emerge.
And I'm assuming, but I'll just clarify that we should expect lots of failure, lots of experimentation, because creativity is inefficient, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So you had mentioned this to me when we were talking about this episode before we started recording.
Yep.
And I love this. You said LLM transformation is the new digital transformation. And that really kind of was a light bulb moment for me, because digital transformation, even though it's now been around for many, many years, it still has this, you know, there's still a bell curve with it.
Yeah.
And there's still large companies transforming digitally, right?
Yeah.
In a meaningful way that they haven't started or completed their digital transformation. So now
yeah.
we have this kind of new wave of LLM transformation layered on top of it. So talk to me about that. Like, why is LLM transformation the new digital transformation? Because that's so exciting.
Yeah, you know, I think this is, and I'm to try to draw parallels, right, with how digital transformation has really gone, right? I think, you know, there were advances in process, you know, around Agile and just sort of the general concepts of Agile that didn't necessarily change the nature of, you know, the software you built, but it certainly changed the nature of how you built it, right? And there were advantages that you could see just based on, if you operate a little bit differently, you can get better visibility into, you know, where you actually are in your timelines. You can deliver value faster. You know, you can ship working software faster. And I think with LLMs, a lot of the same kinds of impacts are coming, right? It's not that the end product is necessarily different. For software, it's going to be code that runs somewhere, right? It's going to solve somebody's problem. But the notion of how, you know, you build that is now potentially that much different, right? The team you need might be different, right? If you have people who can, you know, be filling multiple functions because they can lean on LLMs for part of it, right? You know, do you need, you know, a designer and a product manager and 10 engineers? You know, maybe you need 5 cross-trained people who are good at pieces of all of those things and use, you know, AI and other technologies to fill in the gaps. That transformation is every bit as real and every bit as, you know, sort of disruptive, I think, as the Agile transformation was. And, you know, the argument, I think, is, you know, well, could you wait? Could you just, you know, see how this, you know, all shakes out? It's like, well, yeah, you could, but then you'd be in that same seat of the guys who were doing Waterfall and had not transformed, you know, digitally, and are now doing it 30 years later, right? You know, you've got to get ahead of this now, especially those of us who are working in these, you know, Agile industries.
I smiled because you just reminded me of as recent as 10 years ago, which is a funny thing to say, but as recent as 10 years ago, I was having conversations, and you probably were too, with CTOs who were saying, in retail specifically, where people were taking like physical store managers and turning those people into product managers.
Yeah.
Because, oh, they manage the store, my flagship store in Manhattan. So of course they can manage the digital team because we're still selling products. And when you said, oh, you need a new team, I initially thought, well, of course we know how to do that. And then I thought, of course we don't know how to do that.
Right. No, you know, we have some prior examples, but you know, this time is different, right? It really is. I think, you know, when you look at just that piece of, you know, it unlocks people to do things that they're not explicitly trained to do, that they're not specifically expert in, but that they understand kind of the outlines of well enough to prompt, right? You know, the whole concept of prompt engineering in part is, you know, how do I get the right thing out of this resource? And it's a lot like what product managers have done with engineers and designers, right? You know, you're prompt engineering to ask people, you know, to explore parts of a product or to solve somebody's problem. Like, so many of these things are the same and so many of them are completely different, right? It's just, you got to understand kind of what that pattern really is.
It's going to be interesting to see what patterns do emerge in terms of which roles, new roles, people get wrong and teams get right, because I think we will see patterns emerge over time. I mean, we have so many examples of this, like the role of quality assurance changed when we introduced test-driven development. I mean, there's so many parallels that I'm thinking of as we're talking. Really interesting to see how that plays out at the team level. So let's build upon that and talk about tech leaders. Let's say I say, okay, I want to build LLM fluency and capabilities on my team.
Yeah.
And short of telling my entire team, go use whatever tool you want and tell me what's working, you know, what have you seen? Because I know you've been working a lot with specifically the Stride team and others on this. Like, where do we start?
Yeah. And you know, on the Stride side, you know, we have a couple of good examples so far, kind of, you know, a right way and a wrong way. And, you know, we've had a handful of people who were just enthusiasts about this, right? They're reading all the same stuff I am. They're excited about it. You know, we're all either, you know, current or former coders. So we just kind of grabbed stuff and started playing, right? And so I think when you're motivated enough, you can do that. There's a ton of great stuff out there to help you get started, just seeing real things happen with, you know, LLMs that you're running on your laptop, right? You know, let alone ChatGPT and GPT-4. So like the learning curve can be very shallow if you just want to go out and sort of bite it off and learn everything you can. But then we also put this to a handful of Striders who were not nearly as enthusiastic about it, and it was a brick wall. It was really hard to get your head around it because there's so much, right? So like to get over the hump is actually a real problem. And so what we've done is come up with a crash course, you know, that we're using internally, and we'd love to put one out there for the world as well, that we think would just sort of get people to that minimum, you know, spot where they're able to engage with some of the technology that is, you know, very similar to what they're, I mean, these are coders, right? A lot of the people that we're working with here are engineers. They can absolutely do this, but there, it feels like there's so much to learn just to get to the point of sort of initial utility.
Yeah. And that's so interesting to me that there are so many, and I've seen this at many, many companies that I've talked to in the last month, so many really good software engineers. And there are multiple camps, but there are certainly ones that can't wait to explore on their own. And some that are like, it's where do I start, and kind of get overwhelmed with it. And so you mentioned Stride's got a course, and I believe you said it was an hour long crash course that we'll link to in the show notes, so folks want a place to start, right? Awesome. That's going to be really a really valuable tool. So thank you for that. So going back to impact versus noise, right? Eventually, things will quiet, meaning we will start converging on where are the most impactful ways to spend our time. They will be different for different needs, of course, but what do you kind of foresee right now? What's your best guess at like what an impactful LLM transformation will look like in the midterm future?
Yeah. And, you know, I think this is, it is one of these things where I think there is a lot of kind of, you know, creative creation and destruction, right? You know, to your point, creativity is messy. It's not efficient. So you end up, I think, with on certain things, and, you know, this is kind of like, I'm gonna get the name of the effect wrong, right? But there's an effect where when it becomes easier to produce something that people want, you just get more of it, right? And so for anything, you know, that's creative, you know, and was previously hard to produce, right? You know, code is a great example. You're going to get a lot more code because it's easier to make it, right? Now, are you going to get better software? Well, jury's out, right? You're probably not, but you're going to get more code, right? And so for a lot of these things, you'll get more creativity, higher throughput on anything that used to be constrained, right? So that is potentially a very positive impact, but the negative impact is, you know, buckle up for the wave of spam, right? Which has already started and I think is just going to get that much worse with some of these generative technologies, right? Buckle up for processes to get overloaded, right? You know, if all of a sudden you're producing a ton more code and your apparatus for deploying code, you know, hasn't changed, right? If you haven't created more capacity there or figured out how you're going to vet, you know, good code, bad code, you know, QA, you know, quality engineering, all of that stuff is going to start buckling, right? So the creative inputs are going to get better, but on the negative side, you know, you're going to see sort of other processes, I think, you know, stumble.
That's it. That's so interesting. I mean, you know, this is really theory of constraints, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're moving the bottleneck. That's all that, you know, that's all you're doing, right? That's what we're doing, right? And it is going to be interesting to see once you have, I mean, it's, you see it in schools, right? You have all these children instantly writing these, you know, essays, you know, with chat GPT assistance, many times with their teacher's encouragement to get them to understand how to integrate with the tool.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden teachers have so much more to do.
Right.
Then they even, right? And they already have a lot to do.
No, they do. I mean, just the notion of like anything that unblocks creativity, right, has these downstream effects, right? And, you know, and I think that, so, you know, I think that's sort of a short-term thing. I think in the short term, we're going to see this explosion of creativity and we're going to see processes struggle, right? But I think the longer term, you know, there's a really positive potential impact, which is that you do reorganize your teams essentially not to produce, because like just it's a good example of actually about, you know, producing essays makes a lot of sense when you're graded on that essay, right? It's like you're essentially just producing more of the output so that you can, you know, kind of get through the process faster and free up more time for, you know, scrolling on TikTok. In the longer term, you're going to want to produce less of these outputs that are easy and more of the outputs that are actually either, you know, inputs to sort of the easy stuff and, you know, produce sort of more better versions of it, or that are genuinely hard, right? We'll find things that are, you know, human intelligence optimized, right? We'll find ways for humans to add value to processes. And, you know, you'll still produce probably every bit as much of the easy output, but you'll produce, you know, hopefully better versions of the harder input. But that requires rethinking teams, rethinking processes, rethinking incentives. You know, like you're not going to want to ask a kid to write, you know, a perfect essay to get into college anymore, right? Because ChatGPT will write a better one. That whole thing is going to have to change. And it will find new ways to kind of measure sort of real value and merit.
Yeah, absolutely. Twice now we've come back to rethinking teams. And that is, before talking to you today, I hadn't truly understood the value of getting ahead of that. So for folks listening, if you're not thinking about that, I was at the CTO Summit in New York City a couple weeks ago, and it was hundreds of CTOs, and we were talking about LLMs, and this idea of the makeup of a team did not come up that much. So I'm really excited that we've hit on this topic, because I think it's something that we can really have folks think about and get ahead of. Speaking of team makeup, I heard something the other week that I really, really disagreed with, and I want to get your take on it. So, you know, just like we're talking about, you can have ChatGPT write a college essay in a second. It doesn't make the student a better writer.
Yeah.
It makes them, you know, have a better essay, maybe, than they would have written. Maybe not, but maybe.
Yeah.
So someone said that if you use ChatGPT and you put a prompt in, it will make a junior software engineer better coder faster.
Yeah.
And that, I thought that was completely wrong, if I may. I just don't, like, you might get a better piece of code in the short term, but I didn't understand how that translated to quicker learning. And so what's your take on that?
Yeah, no, in general, I think you become a more prolific coder, right? So again, your creative output goes up. Does the quality go up? You know, are you knitting things together? Are you solving the problem that you were supposed to solve in the first place any better? Questionable, right? And so I think you shared a great article today, which we should put in the show notes also, just about ways that engineers can use these tools to simply do some of their core tasks better. And things like translating from one language to another, writing code in a stack that you're unfamiliar with, right? You know, like autocomplete, like all the stuff that we sort of are aware is out there. Those are great utility cases, right? I don't think they necessarily make you any better at the craft. And I think this is, you know, the thing that is also interesting is, you know, I think the hottest take I can come up with is that I think the age of specialists is over. I don't think that it makes sense to be a specialist in one, you know, kind of even esoteric thing anymore, because that is the sort of thing that, you know, you're going to be able to find an automated replacement for. If you are good enough to stitch together all of the pieces of a larger puzzle, I think your utility is just that much greater, right? And you end up with, you know, a different role. You end up being the human in the loop. And I think that's actually a really important context, is like, there's a million reasons why no one wants AIs to go out and be these unsupervised, you know, things that just, you know, take care of everybody's problems and do everybody's work. They're afraid that they're going to run off and turn the universe into paperclips. There has to be a human in the loop. And, you know, we may get to the point where we trust it enough that that's no longer true, but it's certainly true now. And a lot of the adoption, you know, sort of resistance that we're seeing is because we have not figured out a way to really keep humans in the loop that well. So I think that's a big area for investment.
So the age of specialists may be behind us or waning.
Waning. I like that.
I mean, okay, so I'll take it a step further, right? Do people even have to learn how to code anymore? I mean, what are you know, what are the college kids? Are they majoring in software engineering, or are they majoring in prompt engineering, right?
Yeah.
Domain skills still relevant at all?
Yeah, I think they are. And I think it also is, this is something that will evolve, right? We may get to the point where we both have enough trust and sort of, you know, enough tooling to let, you know, an AI write, you know, a self-contained web application and, you know, run it, right? But at the moment, these things don't do DevOps. There's a couple of good reasons for that. Like, one is, I think, the very tactical reason of, you don't want to let these things out of their box. But, you know, it also right now is, again, just, it's a creative tool, right? It can write you the code, but to actually deploy it, to use it, to extend it, you know, we still want and need a human in the loop, right? So there's a whole bunch of things where, you know, in software, like, those domain skills are extremely relevant. I think they're going to be more relevant, right? Stitching these pieces together. I think, though, overall, right? Like, yeah, and like, I think I mentioned this example to you, but like, I think ChatGPT code is a lot like Excel macros, right? It is a programming language, right? Or like a way for people who are not sort of, you know, real programmers, quote unquote, to do things. And the things they produce are real. Like, you can run a business off of an Excel sheet with a bunch of macros in it. It's software, right? It's not great software. It's not like software you want to live with and extend and, you know, and necessarily sort of, you know, sell to anyone else. So there are reasons to go further. But again, across all of these creative disciplines, you have different grades. You have hobbyists, you have, you know, sort of these casual use cases that are not mission critical and, you know, don't run on the space shuttle. And then you have the things that actually do, you know, run the space shuttle, right? Like, you need some industrial grade, enterprise grade things, you know, for a lot of these use cases. So I think all of that, you know, it is now easier to be a hobbyist. It is now easier to be cross-functional. It is not necessarily easier to be, you know, expert in, you know, kind of the systems level engineering of things. I think there's still a lot of need there.
I'm wondering if, you know, the Dunning-Kruger effect, where it's like, okay, you think you know something right away, and then you realize you don't, and you're, and then it takes you a while to get, you know, back up to your belief of how well you know that.
Yeah.
I'm going to be interested to see if LLMs and the next kind of transformation that we're facing changes the interaction between people's belief of their knowledge set of technology and their actual knowledge of technology.
I think it absolutely will. But I think the other thing is, you know, and we're all, I think, at risk, you know, of this just being, you know, sort of out of our 20s. You know, I think it's way harder to sort of understand, from the senior perspective, kind of what of the things that we think are important are actually important. And from the junior perspective, the same thing, right? Like, you know, you stood this whole application up in ChatGPT. It must not be that hard. Well, what are the hard things that I'm missing, right? What are the things that I can't see from my vantage point? And so I think there are a bunch of tricks that, you know, like, we all use as senior technologists that are no longer relevant. We're not necessarily going to know what they are yet, but like, at some point, you know, the bots will do it better.
Yep. And so that leads me into my last question as we're wrapping up here. And so, you know, jobs will change. They always, you know, revolutions in the past, the calculator, computers. I mean, this is not the first time we've had meaningful shifts in the value of work. But which roles, which types of people, which industries, or however you want to answer the question, should be the most concerned?
Yeah. You know, I think there's there's sort of the obvious answers, which are anybody who, you know, is a creative, you know, with sort of, let's say, minimal either domain knowledge or kind of, you know, output distinction, right? You know, if you are a copywriter for hire, right, and you, you know, are really just producing sort of content to spec, that is literally, you know, a lift and shift from that kind of person or job to a ChatGPT, right? So there are some obvious ones where, like, you know, there are other ways to add value. Those people will find them, right? They're just not going to be able to do exactly what they did before, right? And I think that that's true of a lot of specialists. There are a lot of people whose jobs used to be, I am really, really good at this one thing. And unfortunately, if the AI comes for that one thing, your utility is now much less, right? So I think, again, it's why specialists and generalists, you know, there are things that it's good to be specialist at, but I would think of it more as the T-shape, right? You know, you're broad at a lot of things, but you're deep at one. That's still great, right? It's still really good to be an expert at something, but it just can't be the only thing. And then, you know, otherwise, I think it's also, and, you know, I just want to acknowledge, there's a lot of us, myself included, just to some degree, who are just uncomfortable, right, with kind of the implications of AI for jobs, for copyright, you know, for, you know, kind of the roles that they're going to play in society. And we have to accept that, right? It's right to be worried. And at the same time, you know, this idea of being the human in the loop is kind of the only way to proceed, right? You have to assume that we will find human roles, right? We'll find ways to participate, because if we don't, you know, that's destructive, you know, to society in a whole different way. So find that way to be the human in the loop.
I love that. Well, with that, we'll end there, because I really, really absolutely love that. Find a way to be the human in the loop. I'm going to definitely think about that in the coming weeks. So I appreciate all of your insights here today. It was great to chat with you, Dan. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And those notes to the Stride 1-hour crash course on LLMs will be in the show notes. And I will see you next time. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thanks, Debbie.
Hey, everyone. If you've enjoyed today's episode, remember to subscribe, give it 5 stars, and more importantly, share it with someone that you think will benefit from listening. And remember, as always, think about the 1 to 2 key takeaways that you can apply today to help you and your team achieve your goals. Until then, keep iterating.